Thank you guys so much for tuning into this week's episode of the Urban Misfit Show. We have Sam and Ken from Bolter and Lincoln, and we really dive into how they're able to build and manage relationships for brands and for influencers in today's age. So I'm super excited about this week's episode. All right, guys, thank you so much for tuning into this week's episode of the Urban Misfit Show. I'm super excited because I was just on their podcast. We've got Sam and Ken.
Hey, guys.
Hey.
How we doing?
Doing all right.
Doing well.
Doing all right. Love the space. Love everything about this
room. I love
room.
The weather talk, the brick awkwardness. Yeah.
Do you like the blank walls in here?
Yes.
Yeah, actually. I mean, you can draw all over them. I mean, it's a great creative space,
yeah,
right?
Exactly.
I mean, just, you know, bust out the washable markers.
Ooh,
here we go.
Love it. Well, just to start out, can you guys walk us through what you do? And more importantly, like how you've been able to get to where you are? Yeah. Individually, collectively, however you want to answer that.
Yeah.
Okay. Sam, I don't know. You want to dive into some B&L stuff?
Yeah, let's do it. So, well, we'll first start. Ken and I both work at Belter and Lincoln, which is down the third ward, just a couple blocks from this office. We're both in the PR and social media department. So we're doing anything from pitching journalists to writing. We manage all the organic social media, so like none of the paid campaigns, although we have a say into those as well. Mm-hmm. Influencer marketing. We create micro video content, kind of like mobile photography for a lot of clients. So pretty much anything you can think of underneath public relations, digital, social media, we have our hands in. But yeah, so personally, I went to school at Carroll University in Waukesha. So smaller school, love that. Now B&L is kind of a smaller agency, which I also love. Really, really like family oriented. You can kind of bring ideas from the bottom up, which I really like. But yeah, so I went to school at Carroll and then moved to Milwaukee 3 years ago now. And yeah, really love this city and started marketing degree and then kind of jumped right into agency life right away with Belter and Lincoln as an internship, which turned into a full-time job for me.
So, nice.
Yeah.
I had a similar yet very different path from Sam. Also went to a smaller school. I went to Ripon College. Grew up in the Milwaukee Tosa area, so I'm very familiar with the area. Love it. I'm back, obviously, so I definitely do like it, even though the weather gets pretty damn cold.
Yeah,
here
you don't want to talk about it right now.
But yeah, I went to Ripon College. Wasn't really sure what I wanted to do, but fell in love with the newspaper there. Ended up as the editor there and ended up getting into journalism post-college. So I worked for a couple of small-town newspapers in the Wisconsin Dells area. Really liked, you know, sharing other people's stories there. I was always kind of like the man in the background, but in small towns like Reedsburg and Portage, I was also pretty well known around town too, which was sort of interesting.
Yeah.
And worked with a lot of great people in those spots. And PR was always considered kind of like the dark side. So it's somewhat ironic that I now find myself in PR, but it definitely isn't. We don't have any at Belter and Lincoln. We don't have any evil clients or anything like that, as far as I know. So it's been a good and easy transition for me, although I've been at B&L now for about 6 years, which is kind of hard to believe. But going from journalism and, you know, telling stories, like understanding what the story is, being able to dive deep into it and then share it is something that I really enjoy doing there. And I still get to kind of do that now in PR.
Yeah. So yeah, I love that. I love both of those. I want to dive a little bit deeper into that just because that's one that's incredible. But like now you're on the opposite side. So what would you say are some things that those journalists are looking for now in a story? Like what are some tangible things that maybe an entrepreneur or anybody that's looking to get out there, they should put in their story and approach those people with?
Right. Well, and everybody's going to say this, and it's just kind of a matter of how can you define yourself as truly unique? I feel like that's a word that gets, you know, used quite a bit. Like, I've got this unique story or this unique product, and everyone does have their own special path to how they got to where they are or to what, you know, they're ultimately trying to do. But you've got to kind of like dig deeper yourself and finding, what is it that I offer that nobody else can? And whether that's a service or a product or a destination or whatever, everyone's got their own voice. And it's really just being able to communicate in an authentic sort of way. I mean, just being real with who you are, what you're trying to accomplish. And that's something that can put you on the right path, at least with getting coverage on yourself.
Yeah.
And I mean,
go ahead. Yeah. From a real tactical point of view, I would say, like, if we're talking like entrepreneurs trying to get coverage, and if it's TV, if it's print, if it's digital, whatever, if you can have a media kit of yourself that you can have just a Dropbox folder of, right? Like no cost associated. Maybe you're taking pictures on your iPhone and whatever that has to be, of like a headshot, a couple shots of like you doing whatever your business is, some actionable, and even if some video, like those kind of things will make it so much easier for a journalist to say, yes, I want to cover you, not only for the reasons Ken said, like it's relevant to the audience, it's a local story, it's a unique story, but then you're making it easy for the journalist. That's the part that a lot of people don't understand. They think that just because who they are, people are going to flock to them, which yes, there's a certain 1% of people that have that privilege of like, okay, yeah, you just created something really, really buzzworthy, you're viral, go ahead. But everyone else, you kind of have to sludge through the mud a little to say, hey, I'm going to make your life easier than the person before me. And I have the prerequisite of having a unique story, right? So it's think really tactical on that point too.
That's a perfect point. And I mean, as a former journalist, I wouldn't call myself lazy, but certainly anytime that you could make it easier on a journalist, the better.
Yeah.
Because they are getting swamped with lots of people trying to tell their story, trying to talk about themselves or what they're doing in the community. And if you can say, hey, I'm doing this, and by the way, here's video of me doing it, here's photos, here's a quick one sheet fact sheet on who I am and what I'm doing.
Yeah.
It's like these are opportunities to kind of give yourself a leg up when you're going to the press or a journalist or a blogger or someone that can share your story.
And don't be afraid to kind of be your own PR person. I feel like originally when PR was more formal and maybe more print focused, it was almost like, oh, wow, he's so arrogant or he's representing himself. But like now, really, you have to be your own PR engine. You know, even if it is just I'm doing PR on Instagram through the DM feature, like that to me is PR as much as doing PR for Coca-Cola would be, right? Like you have to be able to tell your story. And Q, I think you do a really, really good job with this, is just being able to say, this is me. And we talked about this on the show a couple of weeks ago. You know, the first view versus the 10 millionth view, you still have to export that same story, that same brand, because if you change, then the media, the consumer, they're all going to say, okay, well, their PR has become fake. Their PR has become they're not really wanting to relate to me. You lose the public relations part of it then, right? Which is, I think, what we always look for when we're talking to brands and journalists too.
Yeah. So that's awesome.
Yeah,
it is. It's actionable. That's what I like. I was listening to a podcast with Sean Cannell. He's like a big YouTuber, and the quote that he said was, different is always going to be better than better, which I think goes back to your authenticity and just finding that unique value prop that you have that sets you apart from everybody else. So I love that.
That's
and I love the actionable, put this in the media kit, and things that people just don't think about or people are just afraid to do.
Yeah.
Because again, they feel like, I don't want to be too into myself, you know?
Right. So yeah.
I dig that.
And definitely think digital media kit when we're talking media kits.
Yeah,
because I mean, a lot of people, you know, it's easy to go old school. Like, here's my folder with a zip drive and, you know, actual, sheets
of
paper.
Your manila folder.
Hey, I mean, if you're going to like some trade show or like writer conference or whatever, like, you know, sure, go nuts. You know, have at it. But I mean, you know, digital media kits. Yeah. Wave of the future, guys.
How would you define PR?
Defining PR. Wow, what a simple question. It's so difficult to answer. Yeah, that's, I mean, really, you're talking about the public perception of yourself or organization, I would say. And because, I mean, it's we're constantly trying to achieve coverage for our clients, but maybe there is something that is, I don't want to say nefarious, but maybe something that we don't want necessarily getting out. And then sometimes it's just kind of making sure that kind of stuff doesn't get out into the media. So really, I mean, I feel like it's largely built in a public perception arena.
Yeah.
If that makes any sort of sense.
Yeah. I think the big words that count, because everything he just said is so spot on, but I think the big words for me are, you're telling timely and true stories. And I think if you don't have both of those, sometimes PR falls flat, any campaign, right? Because if you're telling, hey, and we work with Door County Visitor Bureau, for example, if you're telling people to come visit in the winter, but you're trying to talk to them in the summer, obviously that's a clear example, timely, right? And if you're trying to tell a false story where we have the best water parks in the world, okay, well, they don't have zero water parks, so you're right? So you have to figure out, where is that timeliness and where is that truth in whatever story? And I think we always try to think, even the biggest brands we're working with, how does that boil down to a person, right? Because people are always going to relate and respond to that honesty that comes out of time and truth, I think.
Nice.
What do you guys, so both of you guys, you mentioned a lot about stories.
Mm-hmm.
What do you guys think? There's a huge push right now, whether it be on LinkedIn, you go on Instagram, you go on anything, everybody's telling each other to tell each other stories.
Mm.
Why do you think that's so important for someone, let's say like my intern outside?
Yeah. And you're saying like for them to create and tell those stories?
Yeah. Why do you think it's important for anybody, just that normal Joe Schmo to tell a story?
I think, I don't know about you guys, but I really, really like Gary Vaynerchuk, Gary V, and just his content is really good. And his biggest quote, and so I won't say this is mine, is document versus create, right? And I think like that is something that I always try to think about if it's PR, if it's my own life. And no matter who you are, if you have 10, if you're Will Smith, who just reinvented himself from movie star to YouTube personality.
Incredible job.
Like, yes. Right? I mean, that's the example of document versus create, because if he wrote out movie star, he was a dying star. He literally would have not had any following in 5 years. Now he's reinvented himself. Mm-hmm. So even if you are the most popular star in the world, or if you are just out of college, if you're a eighth grade slime maker, right, which is a huge trend for middle schoolers, wherever you are, if you can document, people are going to resonate with that story so much more than if you're like, even, yes, the best YouTube creators, they aren't just running B-roll. They're talking to the camera, right? They're telling that story in the midst of them actually creating and showing off their skills too. So that's why I always think document over create.
Before you go, I just want to go into that, because everybody says document, don't create. And I totally agree, but what does documenting mean and what does creating mean?
That's a really good question. And I think each person has their own opinion of that too, because immediately when you say document, I think, face first camera, and you're telling, hey everyone, I came out here, I got this, coffee, now I'm at this meeting. And like, that's a fine style for a lot of people, a lot of creators. And it's not like the CEO of Coca-Cola is going to go document his day for Coca-Cola's channels. But I think there is, whatever that document is, it's telling those timely, truthful stories. That can be never you showing your face, but you're telling other people's stories. But I think what happens is creators sometimes they spill over into this idea of inauthentic and dishonest, because they're creating things that aren't reflective of someone's real life. Because creators, we all know that whatever you see on an Instagram influencer or celebrity's page, it's not always reflective of real life. Or a mommy blogger, okay, we know the kid just threw up on you 2 minutes ago, right? But now you're posting that you they were sleeping for 5 hours and you made 75 cookies. Like, we know that's not actually true, right? So there's that authenticity where creating for the sake of telling a lie, that's where I think draws the line. But creating for the sake of showcasing a skill that a lot of people like why do you go to the movies? Because these people created in a world we know that doesn't exist, right? Mm-hmm. They told a story. And I think it's more about defining what's not creating than what is documenting, if that makes sense to me.
I like that.
So,
as someone who grew up in really the 90s, I mean, I was born in the mid 80s, but I watched a lot of TV sitcoms in the 90s. And to me, these situational comedies is kind of what Sam is referring to as like a creator, these contrived scenes, something that isn't natural in the flow of this person's life, or something that wouldn't be very natural in really anybody's life. And I think that the documenting part is truly, getting back to my old journalism days, just reporting on this is what I'm doing. And a lot of times, these people, whether they're, an entrepreneur or a CEO for a company or a major influencer on social media networks, these people are already living pretty interesting lives and doing interesting things, going to interesting places. And so, I mean, just simply, setting the scene on, hey, this is what I'm doing. I'm documenting my life right now. This is what's going on today. And people love seeing it. Because there's an element of, oh man, that's just like me. I do that too.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's also maybe that element of, dang, that looks really awesome. And I wish I was this person. Yeah. And I had their life.
There's the wanderlust,
man, I wish
right?
I could do, I wish I could do some of these things that this person is doing. So to me, that's kind of what the document documenting versus creating kind of boils down to.
The biggest word you said was relate, right? It goes back to public relations, right? So how, if a person cannot relate to the content you're putting out, then therefore it fails, in my opinion, right? Because it's either needs to create this wanderlust of, I relate to the fact that I also want to be there, like that's really cool, or I relate because he or she shares the same problems that I have in a day-to-day life too.
Yeah, I think with stories, especially like stories specifically, and I can go into the document versus the other side, but the stories more than anything, especially like we've been able to grow to the point we are just by telling our individual stories, but then telling the team's individual stories. Yeah. And it's just crazy important. I've been even stressing to like my mom and my dad, like, hey, I'm not telling you to go make a LinkedIn video, but just know that you're interesting too. And a lot of people maybe from their generation don't realize that maybe the celebrities from their age are interesting, but they aren't interesting. Where you talk to my mom, he's talked to my mom or my dad, like everyone's interesting people. Everyone has their, like you said before, everybody has their own unique story. That's incredible. I think another question that I've been completely obsessed with in the last couple of weeks is, obviously you guys both went to school, graduated from college. What do you guys think you've learned outside of college that like an essential skill that you have today that you didn't learn in school?
Okay.
That could have been taught.
That should have been or could have been. Oh, yeah. Okay. Do you got something?
I got something. go Sam. Let me think for a second. I definitely have a few that I could go to.
Right. I think, I'm 3 or 4 years out, so it's like a little more relevant like to me right now.
Yeah.
Are we the same age?
I just turned 25.
Damn, yeah. We're the same age. Yeah. Why do you look so much older than me? You look like I'm 12, man.
When was your birthday?
Yesterday.
Oh, I commented on your post. Okay.
Happy belated. Happy belated.
I was like, wait, I think I just remember that. Okay. Happy belated birthday again.
Appreciate it, man.
What was I saying? Okay, school. Yes. So I've gone back and visited Carroll's small school. They always try to engage with alumni. I've gone back and spoken to marketing classes. And it's funny because I loved my education. So like anything I'm about to say, do not think like Carroll's a bad school. But I go back to marketing classes and I almost kind of like, I laugh looking at the kids in the chairs because I'm like, if you guys, like everything you're hearing right now, like in the chapter, in the unit, whatever the book says, it's really not, it has no teeth. Right. Like that's my gut reaction. Like everything I remember, it had no teeth for me. It was like checking the box of the grades that I needed to get. Right. Yep. And that taught me consistency, organization, responsibility. Fine. But in my opinion, you should go to college for 1 year and then you should have 3 years of intensive internships. Mm-hmm. And truly, I believe that. I think the first year should be how to be an adult. They should teach you basic financial classes. Like seriously, right? Like things when like how to do laundry. Maybe they're not teaching how to fold it, whatever.
Retweet.
But
man.
But like there is that initial trial by fire when you first get there where you're like, I gotta eat for myself, I gotta cook. Oh my gosh, right? Like that's an initial life lesson. But they should teach you basic college classes and maybe one class from your major. And then a professor should literally take you and sign up 3 companies that you're going to do or 6 companies in 6 semesters, whatever that's going to be. Because I truly believe the things I never learned were like actual hard skill software programs. Let's say if it's like video, if it's audio, like the real world skills that way. And then just how to talk to people without being nervous or like think that you don't have anything smart to say. Because I truly believe I do a lot of improv comedy on the side just as a hobby, just because I was so nervous in college to speak in class. What my peers would think, what other people would think, and like just doing some sort of like talking in front of people, if it's for comedy, if it's poetry, whatever. I think that's a skill that it's a soft skill, right? It's intangible a little, but through practice, if it's an internship, if it's public speaking for a whole semester, those are the skills that I think that I really wish I would have just become a practitioner more of than like fancy, like, 401, how to connect in a digital age, marketing, psychology. It's like, that's great, but like, I want to do things very tactically. I want to run a Facebook ad. Things like that you don't even talk about because the professors sometimes haven't had that experience because 5 years ago they didn't exist.
Yeah.
Right.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
That is probably the number one thing that I was going to bring up is just sort of that real world experience. And I think my alma mater, I mean, we're talking about, you know, 10 plus years ago now that I graduated, but I feel like Ripon College did a pretty good job overall of trying to hook up students with internships and things like that. But I mean, even those typically are going to be during the summer. And to me, book learning, doing the lectures, doing homework, doing tests, unfortunately, it's just kind of like a part of it that is probably not going to go away anytime soon in our culture, but just kind of that practical experience, which is why I think, you know, for me, getting involved with the student newspaper was huge. If I hadn't done that, I don't know what kind of track I would have ultimately gone down. But I mean, I really feel like I found my calling in really telling stories and going out to find stories
outside of the classroom.
Exactly. Right. Outside of the classroom. And I feel like colleges and universities could probably do a better job of like making sure that their students are getting out there into the real world, trying and failing and hopefully succeeding a little bit out there just to kind of learn what it's all about. But yeah, I mean, when I first got into college, you know, to me, it was just sort of like a next step kind of thing. Like, you know, you keep going to school and it's like, okay, now I'm going to go to college. And I feel like really it's a situation where you can get as much out of it as you want to. And I think it really is incumbent upon really anyone who is going to college or university. And hopefully, you know, they get a little bit of guidance from a counselor or a professor that they really connect with. And just getting out there, getting that real world stuff underway.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, in college, Q can attest to this. I just went around and did every single internship I could. And it was honestly because I was getting C's and D's in class and I needed to set myself apart in some other way. And that, like, I learned so much that, like, people my age now are just starting to learn because they're getting that real world experience now rather than when I was getting it before. But like I had an acquaintance ask me the other day, hey, what should, like, can you give my son some advice on school? I was like, in school? She's like, I can't afford for him to go to school. And he can't afford to go into it. Like, he would be going, putting himself in all these loans, all this stuff. And it's, I don't ever want to be the guy that says, don't go to school, follow your passion, all that stuff. Because at the end of the day, there's probably like a one in what, 10,000 chance that you go through everything and you go and follow your passion and you actually make money off of it at the end of the day. Yeah. So I told him straight up, I said, hey, college or like all these corporations now are looking for high schoolers for internships now because high schoolers are holding themselves accountable. Whereas a lot of college students are doing it because, oh, I have to do it. And the high schoolers are actually wanting to learn. And I told them, I was like, go apply for some internships. If you like it and you actually want to go and do it, then go to school and figure it out. Like that real world experience, like you said. And that has, I mean, he's close. He's interviewing for positions with college students. He's like, should I be nervous? I'm like, no, because if they are interviewing you, like you're holding yourselves accountable.
You're already ahead because it's different. It's that quote, right? It's different is always better than better, right? You know, I think that's true. Like he or she's just different because they came from high school and have a different work ethic, right?
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
School is a method. It's not the method. It works for some people. It doesn't work for everybody.
That's really smart. Cause I think I was, you know, I was, as you were talking, I was thinking, obviously if you want to go be a pharmacist, right? Or a doctor, it's not an idea. Go from high school to go get an internship in the surgery department, right? Like you need to be able to have that schooling, right? Like that might be your passion, but
yeah.
You know, if you're creative, if you want to do video, like I think another Gary Vee thing I really, really like, and I try to talk to my younger brother a lot about, is like working for free from the top of someone in their industry, right? Like he wants to go into like sports administration, like minor league baseball, like is the kind of the foot in the door. I said,
yeah,
go. I'm from Beloit, Wisconsin. We have the Snappers there.
Yeah.
It's like, we know people who work in that, like go work for free. Maybe they pay you $7.50 an hour, $10, whatever. But work for free. You have someone you can live with.
Oh, yeah.
Get that experience. Work next to the director of marketing and your career will take off from there. I don't know where it will go, but it'll show you if you love that career or, if you're up to that career or not, you know, so. But that's just what I was thinking about as you were talking.
No, yeah, completely. Like when I was doing internships at I did internships with the Bucks, the Brewers, even the Admirals. But I started with the Lakeshore Chinooks, which is a summer collegiate team here. Yeah. And what they attract, maybe a good night is 2,000 people, which is great for them. But at the end of the day, you have to start. I used to come home at night. We were college roommates, and he used to laugh at me because I would have trash. I was literally I was a game day marketing and operations internship.
Fancy title.
I was a janitor. I was cleaning the toilets. I was making sure I was washing my hands. But then after that, I was serving food. I was doing everything. I put up the outfield signs. Yeah. But that internship, because I did it so well, opened up doors with the Brewers, with the Bucks, with all that stuff. So I encourage your brother to do that.
It's a humbling experience, but then it opens those doors.
Definitely.
I feel like, for you guys, your college experience, what a door opened for the two of you in that respect. How much do you feel like college and that experience of just meeting people and making connections, how important was that versus even maybe some of the schooling?
Yeah.
I can never
say it's bullshit. People ask me all the time, was college worth it? And I 1,000% want to say no, but it was because again, we were college roommates. And again, I got this internship and my mindset changed. It was worth it, but it was again, the connections and the relationships and the doors that opened. So
yeah,
I agree.
1,000% worth it. Maybe not worth the amount of debt I'm in right now, but it was worth it. I wouldn't be in Milwaukee right now. I wouldn't be part of this, people say the renaissance of the city. We wouldn't be in here right now if I didn't make the decision to go to school. So 100% worth it. Maybe the pricing needs to change or something like that.
That's pretty tricky. It's compared to inflation and minimum wage. It's crazy how expensive it is.
It kills you,
dude.
It's going towards a cliff based on economics, college debt is going towards a cliff that will really, you talk about the top 10% of those brands might survive, but extra brand. I don't see how they will survive when kids realize they can get internships and go straight into the workforce and not just trade work, right? That maybe maybe you can go be a plumber or you can go be work a really tough job somewhere else. But now you can do anything you want and you don't have to pay $40K or whatever.
Exactly.
As on average.
There's a guy that Q met with the other day, literally multimillionaire, drives around this beautiful car, didn't go to school. He coded himself. He taught himself how to code. He taught himself about social media ads, all that stuff.
No, he built connections and relationships. He works with Ty Lopez, dude. He doesn't code. He doesn't do anything. He's really good at what he does, but he just builds these teams around him. He went and did it. Again, sweat equity.
Got to put in that
21
work.
21 years old. Nobody knows about him here, which is freaking ridiculous, but freaking beast.
Yeah. Which also shows he's humble and wasn't doing it to be noticed. He's just I have the urge to work and I'm going to work until it pays off, right? That's incredible.
Yeah. I want to go back to something he said, because I used to have this belief that someone would bring in a resume. Hey, I worked at Subway. I worked at the mall here. Boom, 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 boom. And I'd be like, no, you don't have the experience. No, you can't work with us. And now, I don't know what's changed in me, but I totally value I'm going to go do what I have to do and work at Subway and make money so I can make ends meet. So I just want to ask you guys, what are some jobs or careers or things that you did that maybe you didn't want to do, but they taught you a lot?
Landscaping. That was, you want to talk about sweat equity. Working summers. Just wearing a tank top and shorts and just sweating it out. And, of course we had, riding lawnmowers, but there were some days where you're building a retaining wall or you're digging up the stump of a tree that you cut down and stuff where it's just I got to really, really work. And it's so much when you're doing landscaping too. So, work, hard work. I learned from that. For me, the book stuff was always relatively easy, read a couple chapters, whatever, but hard work with landscaping. And then another big thing that I learned there was the details, because a lot of times when there's a person who's hiring you to do work for landscaping, they want it to be perfect. They've got their, super expensive flowers and bushes and trees, and they want to make sure that they look really, really nice.
Oh yeah.
So you can't go in there and just be, you know, hacking stuff up. Like, you got to be very careful, very particular. Every little detail matters. Mm-hmm. And I mean, a lot of what we do now too in PR and social media, it is those little details that you've always got to be cognizant of. You know, you're using the right word, that, you know, you're not totally looking like a doofus. You know, it's very important that you've got all the little details, you know, minding your P's and Q's, all that stuff. So
yeah. Respect, bro.
Yeah.
My first job was at, my grandparents started a pool company, right? Like backdoor, but they backyard like equipment, but mostly pool installation. They started that like in the 50s, I believe. No, it's a 50 year anniversary. So good tradition there. I got to learn from like family business, but going in, I don't know if anyone has worked in a family business here, but there's so much, there's immediate politics of mixing family and business. We all know that, right? So I think that taught me a little bit how to sometimes shut my mouth, put my head down and just work and not get distracted by politics and just, I'm going to work, right? Mm-hmm. I learned how to deal with customers right away. I was just in customer service at the desk, effectively, at the front counter. And that taught me how to deal with crabby people, with happy people, and kind of find and not get up. I'm very extroverted. I feed off a lot of energy from other people. But I think that taught me how to kind of ride a middle wave, not get really low from horrible customers or really high from super thankful customers. And then more recently, I worked as a wedding caterer for like one summer in college, right? And I think similar to landscaping, that taught me taught me humility for sure. You know, like obviously serving people food, but then also cleaning up old food, right? I mean, that's simple. It puts you in your spot a little, like, hey, I'm working hard for this. I'm going to earn my money, but it's like, you know, this is not what I want to do the rest of my life, right? But I think both of those jobs taught me a little bit of understanding what service is about and kind of understanding no matter where I am or how successful or how unsuccessful I am, I'm always going to treat other people with empathy and respect. Cause I think empathy is one of those things that is such a trait that people have trouble with. And it can be applied to anything from you and I talking to me and my dad talking to big brand, talking to small brand, whatever that is. I think a lot of people always lead with how they feel in that moment, their self-interest versus saying, well, I wonder where that other person's coming from. What kind of bad day did they have? Right. And that, I think those service jobs really teach you how to have that empathy for service providers or yourself or other people in the future too.
No, I agree. I think for sure. And that's why, again, like my opinion has just completely changed. Like I so much respect for people that do what they have to do, because you do learn a lot about yourself in those situations, and you learn a lot that you're going to take with yourself or take with you in those next situations, next jobs that you have. Yeah. I do want to pivot a bit. Again, like back to PR and back to branding, because you guys do an incredible job. Big part of that is being able to sell yourself. So I want to ask you guys, like, one, like, why, if I'm a company, why do I come to you guys? But also two, like, how are you helping me set myself apart? Let's say I'm a big corporation, whatever kind of company you want me to be, that's what I am. I'll be whatever you want.
But okay.
Why am I coming to you? And then how are you helping me set myself apart?
Yeah, right on. Well, something that we've talked a lot about already today, relationships. So, I mean, in terms of your fairly traditional channels, whether it's, you know, TV or newspaper, you know, print media, we've got avenues to people who are writing these stories, telling these stories on TV already. So, I mean, we've got those connections. So if you are a little shy or a little afraid with, you know, how do I go to the media with my story? Well, we can help you do that.
That's what we do.
Additionally, being sort of an outside person, I mean, everyone kind of knows their own story. And it's easy for you to sometimes forget that not everyone knows exactly how you got to where you are or what does set you apart. And we can kind of come in with fresh eyes and really, you know, examine where you're at, how you got to where you are, what makes you newsworthy. So, I mean, we can really kind of look at you with a, you know, not to put you under the microscope, but I mean, we can look at you very closely and kind of figure out, all right, you know, who are you? And what's our angle in with the media? And again, knowing certain media members, we know that, you know, oh, maybe this person is really into religion, or this person is really into the self-starter story. And we can kind of, you know, help cut through all of the fat and layers of, you know, who do I go to talk to about my story? And we can get you there with fresh eyes, hopefully, and a good angle.
And I think a real tactical response to that, because Ken covered kind of our strategy and how we approach clients. I think from like a social media perspective, where we're doing a lot of the community management, if it's writing content, and I think a problem with a lot of brands when they come to us is that social media has become almost it's truly a buzzword. It truly is a buzzword right now. And I think some people think that if I have a Facebook, let's keep it simple. If I have a Facebook and a Twitter, maybe they haven't even gone on Instagram yet. Maybe they have, but they feel like if they just put out the top five things on their website, right? Contact me, about us. But if they literally have that as their content calendar and like horrible photos as the link previews, like I hate when people do that. Like low res link previews make me go crazy. when they do that, I feel like it's kind of a selfish way that brand, like without being knowing they're being selfish, it's very a selfish move, because I think brands don't realize that you cannot just put out content on social media like it's your website. It truly is, you're reaching out to people in that scenario. But a lot of times brands will think that they have the right, because they are a self-proclaimed brand, right? They're a business, that they have the right to throw things at you, right? And I use that analogy, like they have a message on a piece of paper and they're literally throwing it at people when they post. And I think one way that we usually approach it, similar to like how you tell a PR story from a social media perspective, we always are trying to make it seem like you're extending a hand to have a conversation. You're extending out an invite to have that conversation with someone, because, you know, there's so many bulk scheduling tools, Hootsuite, Sprout, where people are like, well, I'll schedule out for the month. Like, that is the worst thing ever. Like, we'll do it maybe 3, 4, 5 days out in advance, like just because, you know, to not have us go crazy every day. But you need to have a real human running that for you, because if you just bulk schedule because, you know, let's say you're a small business owner and you have your niece in high school do it because she has an Instagram page, that is not going to convert into any true ROI for your business. So you have to go back to empathy. Even if you're the biggest brand in the world, you have to have empathy on social media, knowing that the people who are hating you might also have had a bad day. They might be uneducated because you haven't provided them the enough content marketing to understand the problem that they're facing. Or even the people who are really happy might just, you know, are one instance, and they can all of a sudden lose you as a customer the next day if you don't treat them right. We work with Eagle River Chamber of Commerce way up north, and we have run their social media, started an Instagram page and grown that. And from a really specific point of view, we're trying to tap into creators right now, because we're seeing a movement where people are going up there with drones. They're taking high quality video and photos up there. So it's like, okay, that's good from getting the younger demographic from Milwaukee, from Chicago up there.
Creators or documenters?
Yeah, right. Thank you, Ken. And I think the main part there that we're trying to do is give love to those people and feature them, right? And tag their handles, because that simple saying, hey, look at this photo, we love this photo, we're using this photo, and then giving them the love back is not only going to encourage them to create more, but it's going to spark conversation. And you can't think that Eagle River is the conversation. Eagle River is a part of a larger conversation about vacationing in the North Woods.
Yeah.
And I think that is the biggest thing that people do not understand, that just because you're a business does not mean you are the center of the conversation. You are one link on this larger conversation that probably is a Venn diagram of 75 interest levels, right? So I think we always try to approach it with empathy and kind of, you know, forest through the trees idea of like, maybe people don't understand what they're missing right now and kind of how selfish they're coming across on their digital platforms right now.
Yeah, just to kind of move on a tangent and, you know, riff off of that a little bit from a social media perspective, is I feel like a lot of our clients, before they come to us, I mean, some of them have a pretty good understanding of social media. Others might use it as kind of like their own personal like classified section or like the website, like Sam was talking about.
Yeah.
And it's a very like hard sell all the time. And from maybe a sponsored ad perspective, like that might make a little bit more sense, but you really need to have this more like pure type of organic social media going on, where you are constantly engaging your community, growing your community there, and just really, you know, fostering their development and understanding of the experience or product that you have. It's less about really selling yourself as it is really kind of promoting other people around you that have helped make you successful.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's and Eagle River, I mean, a great example of that that Sam talked about there with the, you know, the creators, the documenters, if you will, of, you know, people up there sharing some like really super awesome content and then giving them love back. And it's amazing how those types of posts really generate a ton of engagement and great feedback and conversations.
Yeah.
Good grief. The one that you, the video that you put up there was phenomenal. Just, you know, like a few deer and turkeys.
A couple of deer and turkey in the backyard from a person who lived up there. And it was like, we had like, just to give perspective, it was like a 3,000% increase in reach week over week, right? Just like a truly viral post for that page. And it, you know, to us, it's like deer and turkey, like in snow. Okay. But like, it's a simple, we threw out an olive branch to the community to say, hey, look at this. This is cool. And we step back and let them talk. Right. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the biggest thing. You're not driving that conversation. You're just giving them something to talk about.
Mm-hmm. So that's incredible. What do you guys like? It seems like you guys are mad passionate about what you do. Mm-hmm. What's the word I'm looking for? It's a good one.
I don't know. It'll live in your brain.
It's a good one. Okay. What's been the most fun project for you guys to work on? That wasn't the word, by the way. Fun was not the word, just to let you know.
Yeah. Most fulfilling, maybe, or satisfactory. Yeah. Most proud of.
Let's go that way. Yeah, let's go that way.
Proud of.
Oh, boy. That's a difficult one, just because I don't want to necessarily, you know, say one client is better than another. Ooh. I mean, we've got
PR. Yes. He just won all
of our, we love all of our clients equally. there are some that tend to be a little bit more technical, a little more B2B.
Mm-hmm.
I guess, in a weird sort of way, even though, this client might not be deemed by many as exciting, I find the world of loading dock equipment and workplace safety to be a very interesting and fulfilling client to work with. Right Height is like one of our largest PR clients, and they're super awesome to work with. And speaking about, talking about passion, for a topic that many people don't know a lot about, they are extremely passionate about the products that they make and the service that they provide. And so honestly, like working with them, like kind of gets me really like going and into it. And, some good people there. And definitely like working with them. It's a unique kind of world that they live in though, too, in this B2B kind of world. I mean, we're going to trade publications where a magazine like Modern Materials Handling is like one of the big time publications.
Huh.
Never heard of it before I started working.
You would never pick that up ever. Yeah.
But in a lot of ways, like I find a lot of fun with that, partially because those types of trade publications are always looking for new content, and because Right Height is constantly making new products, we've always got some new stuff to give them. So it's always kind of nice to be like the good guy, the hero almost, I can kind of serve that role of, you're talking about bridging the gap from loading dock facility to the back end of a trailer. Guess what? We got a new leveler that we can talk about.
Nice.
So it's something that is definitely enjoyable for me and kind of a quirky sort of way. That's for sure.
I think from a local perspective, and I think it's something that's just unique that we recently worked on, was we helped, when Pabst came back to Milwaukee, and it was like 2 summers ago now, we helped bring the microbrewery here with just a PR and social and kind of overall campaign, buzz campaign. And that was just really fun from like a local Milwaukee perspective, because I think I was just recently moved here, although I've grown up in Wisconsin. I think we really got to tell like the story of Milwaukee as well as like the story of Pabst.
That's awesome.
As we got to hit it in the Washington Post and some national coverage that way. And that was, I think, just rewarding, because like you guys obviously love Milwaukee right now, two years later after, we got to tell that. And I think that you use the word renaissance, which I think is perfect for where we are right now. But telling the story kind of initially after moving here, that was really rewarding for us and some true, like a true case study for us to say, hey, like we brought a brand here that used to be here, an embattled brand, slightly, and said, hey, no, like this is a new ownership, this is a new cause, and we're excited to be back in Milwaukee because of X, Y, and Z.
That's awesome.
I'm jealous. Back in Milwaukee.
Yeah.
I mean, Pabst just became really this brand. I mean, Miller, well, there was the legal battle there that recently ended.
Yeah.
And quite frankly, I don't know exactly what the terms of it were.
I'm sure there was many bags of money sent.
Yeah. Under the table.
Under the table. Yeah.
Yes. But I mean, the fact that they're doing their own like small batch brewing here is interesting just because brewing had like fallen on the wayside from Pabst. They just became this like this brand more than anything else.
Yeah. But,
yeah. Yeah. Definitely. That was a unique project to work on. And yeah.
Yeah. I'm mad jealous. I used to be obsessed with Pabst.
He was.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He was.
I was actually really excited when they came. Well, when the microbrewery came and everything like that, went a couple times, and I have foregone beer. So,
like in your life,
We're
drinking LaCroix.
Yeah.
Normally, it'd be beer. If it was just me, it'd be beer.
So. Hey, that's LaCroix beer. It's all right.
Easy.
If it was Friday, I would be pissed. No. I'm kidding. Good for you, though. That's a big change, honestly.
In Milwaukee, I feel like a lot of people are like, "Why would you do that?"
Yeah. But, right.
Yeah. Well, it's like when Aaron Rodgers said he was going to, you know, eat cheese anymore. People are like, whoa.
Chill. Trade him.
Okay, Bears fan. Okay.
Please.
We'll give him to the Lions. He still has to play him two times a year.
Right. Sweet. I think we have a few questions for you yet, but there's one that I was just asked that I struggled with a lot. Don't know why, but I want to see how you guys answer it. What question do you wish we would have asked you?
Right now on the show.
Yeah.
It's hard, right?
That is.
Then they reframed it. Like, what do you want to leave the viewers with? If that helps.
Okay. I guess more to your second reframing. Because I'll turn it on me because it's something that I've been trying to like think about and practice in my own life is I think back to the word of empathy. And I think right now with the world of social media, people are so caught up in like the perfect lighting, the perfect time, kind of giving that fake environment of like, especially Instagram. Right. And I think I would just challenge listeners. And this is not like I'm doing it perfectly, so therefore you should listen to what I did. I truly am not doing it perfectly. But if there's a way you can audit yourself, spend a week, you know, maybe giving love to other people on social media, really flip your concept of why it is, use the word social, right? I think people are focusing more on the word media and it's turning more into like a production versus why is it social media first, right? We would be calling it, you know, rom-coms and Netflix if it was just media, right? And I think flipping your understanding of what social is, if you're a brand, if you're an individual, if you're a Facebook group, if you drop the jealousy, drop the comparisons on social media and focus more on like giving love, no matter what size page you are or what platform you're on.
I love that.
That was good. Yeah. my response would be, PR is hard.
I like that though.
It's not something that you can just kind of like wake up and do. There's got to be a strategy behind it. It's got to fit really overall with any kind of marketing that you're doing. It's not something that you can just think about and do later. I think there's a perception. So, I mean, honestly, it's kind of like PR needs to do some PR for itself. Yeah. There's this public perception that PR is almost easy or not that important. And I would argue that it, especially in today's day and age, is critical. I mean, you look at so many millennials that are out there, largest demographic that's out there on the planet right now, and millennials like to kind of stumble upon things themselves. They kind of like to figure things out for themselves or maybe hear about it from a close personal friend. They don't like being sold hard sells all the time.
No infomercials.
It's like sometimes I feel like I've got a lot of friends who are turned off by something because it's like, oh damn, I've seen this, you know, freaking Dodge ad, you know, 1,000 times during this football game. I'm never getting a Dodge.
Yep.
And I mean, it's like, okay, what do they do to kind of position themselves in the public arena? And so, I mean, I would say to your listeners, viewers, that, you know, really think long and hard about what your PR strategy is, how you're going to do it, how you're going to execute it, and be prepared in that arena.
I like that. It's real.
It's awesome.
Yeah.
It's not what they tell you in school. I didn't know what PR was. I actually asked, I didn't know what marketing was either.
I like that. That's real.
Almost lastly, what makes you a misfit? What about you individually goes against the grain?
Mm-hmm. I was the kid who, when I was playing with friends and in the old county grounds, right off of Watertown Plank Road in Tosa. Now it's like just a parking structure for the medical college. In the county grounds, you know, we play, you know, soccer, football, baseball, all these kinds of things. And, you know, I love playing that. I feel like I'm a little bit of a natural athlete, kind of at maybe some point in middle school, just kind of fell off the map, but that's okay. But I was the kid who also had a notebook with him, and I was keeping track of plays and stats. Mm. And I think Sam could even attest to that with
our softball team. And he had a 10-tab Google Doc, Google spreadsheet of everyone's stats. Like, no kidding, there were probably 20 categories. Like, it was more extensive than an MLB game. Like, no kidding. And, like, it was actually fun because you got to, like, track your stats throughout the year. But it was extensive.
That's awesome.
So I'm a bit of, like, this nerd, and you know, I like scored through the roof on my like ACT for math and science, and you know, English was really poor, communication was poor. So naturally, of course, here I am as a communicator, English major, communication minor. You know, it was something that has always kind of challenged me. But I think in my heart of hearts, I'm sort of this like, you know, math nerd bomber type of guy who now enjoys looking at all the metrics that we get and to find out ways that we can improve on what we're doing. So
that is
yeah, maybe something that's just kind of a little weird about me, a little quirky.
Yeah, I like it a lot.
I'll go a little deep, but then spin it. not deep to end the show. So like I was a junior in college and my mom passed away from cancer. Mm-hmm. And like, so that was like a 2-year battle where it was like, oh God, like you're in college, you're supposed to be having the time of your life, right? Like it's mm-hmm. a 4-year vacation. And so that was like a very maturing moment for me, right? Obviously. And I think that's, and a lot of people are like, you know, why are you so positive? Like almost like the girlfriend, so like originally when we started dating, she would be like, yeah, like I tell you something bad and you spin it. Like, I hate that. Right. And, you know, and I think there's like I think the reason I would be considering myself as like a misfit is like, I always lead with positivity because of those things, right? Everyone's lost someone. I don't think that my situation is like, oh, it's, you're so special and you're struggling or whatever. But having lost someone, and if, you know, if it's a grandma, if it's a mom, if it's a brother, sister, whatever that is, I think it truly sobers you up to, and I go back to the social media giving love, it sobers you up to any micro moment in your life. I think you can always realize that someone else has it worse than you at this point right now. And I think if more people led with that, I think the world would definitely be a more fluid place, not like perfect, but it would definitely be a more fluid and collaborative place. So I just think that a reason I'm a misfit is because I think, you know, I've been blessed, but also cursed with things like that, with some obstacles, but being able to spin things positively in an authentic way, I think is something that I'm always going to try to hold on to. It's something I always struggle with because everyone has something they're depressed by. Someone always has something that they, you know, that they're struggling with. If it's bad grades, if it's a breakup, if it's, you know, a sickness, whatever that is, I just think that we can all be a little bit better at hopefully finding the positive angle, but in an authentic way, not being a PR spin, obviously, you know, like going back to our title, you know, not spinning it just for the sake of spinning it, but flipping it because it's a better way to live your life. So
that's awesome.
Yeah.
That's incredible, dude. It is. I appreciate both of you. Lastly, where can people find you? Where can they learn more? Where should they check you out individually and collectively?
Yeah, we have like too many handles now, don't we? Jeez.
Go ahead, Sam.
Okay.
Talk about Belter Lincoln ones.
Yeah. So belterlincoln.com is the, so like Abraham Lincoln, Belter, BOE, belterlincoln.com is just the agency website. All the work there that we do is up there. But then as Q mentioned, he was on our podcast, which we started through B&L called the Marketing IQ podcast. We just, you know, we like talk to different marketing and kind of really spin it more directed towards marketing and digital and really dive deep. Mm-hmm. So we don't have a handle for that. You can just find that on all the Belter Lincoln, Facebook, Instagram pages like that. Otherwise, personally, I'm just the Burnsy 9 on everything.
Dig that.
Yeah. As that's called eighth grade. What do I do with this?
I've never called him that.
No. No one calls me it. Literally, no one. It's like, no. It sounds stupid, but it's like.
I do want to play softball. We're going to start calling it's too fun. The Burnsy.
It's too fun. Don't ever. No. But
that's gotta me. Change it, man. PR.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, my Instagram and Twitter presence could be stronger. I believe I'm just K Laviska there, you know, at K Laviska. Yeah, just owning that handle. Not too many K Laviskas out there. Yeah. LEIVISKA.
Awesome.
Nice.
Appreciate you, dudes.
Yeah, thank you, guys.
Thanks for having us. It's been a great time. We've got an awesome space, and it was a fantastic interview.
Thank you guys again for tuning into this week's episode. Ken and Sam are fantastic and they know a lot about their industry, and I've learned a lot from them just watching them and listening to their podcast. So if you want to learn more about them, feel free to look in the description below or in the show notes and you will find that. And I almost said until next time, I'll see you on the internet. What the fuck? What? Show notes and then what?
Show notes, if any, around me in the description.
Thank you guys again for tuning into this week's episode of the Urban Misfit Show. I learned a lot from Sam and Ken. If you want to learn more about them or find their podcast, you can find that in the show notes or in the description below. Again, we would love it if you love what you heard. If you could subscribe to our channel or leave us a review on iTunes, that would mean the world. Peace.